Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Beloved by Beatrice Small, narrated by Rachel Beresford. Prologue. The night was black and hot. Not a hint of a breeze stirred the fronds of the tall, stately date palms. The onyx sky was studded diamond bright with stars, and all was very, very still, as if the earth itself was poised, waiting. On the edge of the great oasis city of Palmyra, the house of the famous Bedawi warrior chief, Zabai ben Selim, stood alone. Within, a woman laboured to bring forth her child. Her slim white body was tense with the agony of her travail, wet with the perspiration of her effort, and the intolerable summer weather. She bore her travail grimly, refusing to cry out, for to do so was a weakness of character in her mind, and she had not won Zabai by weakness. In her semi-delirium she remembered the day she had first seen him. He had been visiting her father's house in Alexandria on business, and had, by mistake, wandered into the woman's garden. Their glances had met, and her lovely grey-blue eyes had widened at his fierce black gaze. Her soft pink lip slightly parted with surprise, and her young breasts, heaving with emotions she had not known existed, aroused him. No word passed between them. He had not even asked her her name. Instead, he had found his way out of the garden, sought out her father, and asked for her to wife. It had been a great impertinence on his part, for her father was not only one of the wealthiest men in Alexandria, he was also a direct descendant of Egypt's last great queen, Cleopatra. Simon Titus gave his daughter her personal freedom, in the Roman manner. What did she want? He had asked. She had wanted Zabai ben Selim, that hawk-visaged desert man, with his piercing black eyes, who, in the space of one single moment, had captured her soul with his own. It mattered not to her that he was 22 years her senior, or that he had another legal wife and several concubines. It mattered not that any child she gave him would be unimportant in the line of inheritance. Nothing mattered but her love for this marvellous man. And so Simon Titus had reluctantly given his consent. They had been married within the month, and then she had left the elegant comfort of her father's Alexandrian house to live a life that found her wandering half the year across the Syrian deserts, and living the other half in the beautiful city of Palmyra. It was the custom of the Bedawi to spend the broiling summers in Palmyra, and so part of her dowry had been a fine house and gardens on the city's edge. A terrible pain, far worse than any previous, ripped through her, and she bit down on her lip. It would soon be over, and her child would at last be born. Zabai's eldest wife, Tamar, told her to bear down, and she did. "Push, Iris, push, push," Tamar encouraged her. "Aye," came the collective cry of the other women as the infant began to appear between its mother's legs. "Push, I am," Iris snapped irritably at the older woman. "Then push harder." Tamar had no mercy. "The child is but half born, Iris. You must push again." Gritting her teeth, Iris pushed down fiercely, and suddenly felt something wet and warm sliding from her body, emptying her out, and miraculously the pain began to subside. Tamar caught the child, and holding her up announced, "It is a female." She then handed the baby to another woman and pushed Iris back onto the birthing stool. "You must yet bear the afterbirth. Only then will you be done. One more push will do it. I want to see my daughter. Let Rebecca clean the birthing blood from her first. As always, you are too impatient, Tamar scolded. But she understood how it was the first, nay, every time. Within minutes, Iris was sponged with cooling rose water and dressed in a simple white gauze nightrobe. The baby girl, who had wailed lustily after her birth, was now neatly swaddled and placed in her mother's arms. Tamar looked to one of the other women and commanded sharply, "Fetch my lord Zabai!" As chief wife, she was obeyed and looked upon with fear and respect. It was her son, Akbar, who would one day rule the tribe. Looking down on Iris, Tamar thought it was no wonder that Zabai loved her. She was so very beautiful with her milky skin, ash-blonde hair, and blue-grey eyes. She was so very different from the rest of them. A woman Zabai could not only love, but converse with. He entered the room, a man of medium height and strong build, his dark eyes sparkling, his dark hair and beard untouched by silver, despite his 43 winters. His handsome face was sharply sculptural, with its high cheekbones and hawk-like nose. His lips were full and sensuous. His entry brought all the women, but Tamar and Iris, to their knees. He looked at his two wives, and his black eyes softened. He loved them both. Tamar, the wife of his youth, and Iris, the wife of his old age. The other women might give him variety and occasional pleasure, but these two he prized.
"The gods have blessed you with a daughter, my lord," Tamar said.
"A daughter?"
He was surprised.
"Yes, my lord, a daughter."
The kneeling women glanced slyly at each other, and the uncharitable and the jealous among them were hard put not to voice their glee. They were the mothers of sons, and the best the Alexandrian bitch could do was a mere daughter. They watched expectantly for their lord's righteous wrath, wondering if he would deny the brat and order it exposed. Instead, a smile split his face, and he chuckled with delight.
"Iris, Iris," he said,
his deep voice warm with approval.
"Once again you have done the unexpected, and you have given me the one thing which, until now, I have lacked, a daughter. Thank you, my beautiful wife, thank you."
The kneeling women were aghast, praised for having a daughter. All men wanted sons, the more the better. And Zabai had never been an exception. He was proud of his 35 sons, even remembering all their names and ages. But the more perceptive among the women understood. It was the great love he felt for Iris that would excuse almost any fault. They sighed with resignation. Iris laughed, and her laughter was soft and filled with mischievous glee. "Have I ever done the expected, my lord?" she asked. His black eyes laughed back at her. Glancing at the other women, Zabai said curtly,
"Leave us."
"Not Tamar, my lord." Iris would not offend Tamar, who had always been kind to her. She did not forget that if Zabai died, Tamar's eldest son, Akbar, would hold her fate and her daughter's in his hands. Zabai bent to look at his new daughter. Used to large boy babies, he was somewhat awed by the delicate girl child he had sired. The infant slept, dainty dark lashes fluttering slightly against the pale gold skin. Her dark hair was a small tuft of down upon a well-shaped head. Despite her slumber, her tiny hands moved with a fluttery restlessness, the slender fingers fascinating him with their translucent miniature nails. He regarded her almost warily, for although he knew what one could do with a son, he was not quite sure what one did with a daughter. And this child, of all his children, was the one born out of the great love he felt for its mother. Looking up, he observed,
"She is very small."
Both Iris and Tamar laughed. "Girls," Tamar said, "are usually tinier at birth, my lord."
"Oh."
He felt a trifle foolish, but then it was his first daughter.
"Where is the Khaldin?"
he demanded, suddenly remembering.
"Here, lord."
From a dark corner of the room, a hunched shape emerged. As it came forward, it became an elderly man with sharp eyes and a long snow-white beard, dressed in dark, flowing robes, upon which were sewn a pattern of silver-thread stars and moons. The old man bowed low, and Iris held her breath, waiting for the slightly askew turban to tumble off his head into her lap. It didn't.
"Did you mark the exact moment of this child's birth in the skies, Khaldin?"
"I did, my lord Zabai. At the very moment your daughter slipped from her mother's womb, the heavenly bodies of Venus and Mars met in conjunction. Never have I seen the sign so propitious. It portends great things for her."
"What great things, Khaldin?"
"The full natal chart will reveal all, my lord. But I can tell you now that your daughter will be successful in both love and war, for she is already, I can see, beloved of the gods."
Zabai nodded, satisfied. The Khaldin was the most respected astrologer in the East, noted not only for his accuracy, but his honesty as well. As the old man backed out of the room, Zabai looked upon his young wife with great affection.
"How shall I reward you, my little love, for this marvellous child?" he said.
"Let me name her, my lord," Iris replied.
"Very well,"
he agreed, pleased. Another woman would have asked him for jewels. Tamar could not contain her curiosity.
"What will you call her?"
"Zenobia," came the answer. "She who was given life by Jupiter."
"Zenobia,"
Zabai mused.
"It is a good name."
"You must rest now," Tamar said, taking the infant from Iris. "Let your Bab look after Zenobia while you sleep." Iris nodded, beginning to feel sleepy now that the immediate excitement of the birth was over. Zabai arose, bending a moment to kiss his young wife, and then he and Tamar left the room. Alone, Iris sighed and stretched herself gingerly to find a more comfortable position. How beautiful the baby was! Tomorrow she would have a lamb sacrificed in the temple of Jupiter to give thanks for her daughter. She wondered about the Khaldin's predictions, not completely understanding them. Then, as sleep began to overtake her, her anxieties faded. What did it all really matter, as long as Zenobia was blessed and protected? "May you be favoured by the gods all your life, my daughter," Iris murmured softly, and then she fell asleep. Part 1. The Girl. Chapter 1.
"Happy birthday, Zenobia."
Zenobia Bat Zabai, now 6, smiled happily back at her family. She was a lovely child, tall for her age, with long, unruly dark hair that her mother had coaxed into ringlets for this auspicious occasion, and shining silver-grey eyes. Her simply draped white tunic, with its pale blue silk rope belt, set off her light golden skin. Zabai Ben Selim swept his only daughter up into his arms and gave her a resounding kiss.
"Don't you want to know what your presents are, my precious one?"
Zenobia giggled and looked mischievously at her adored father.
Of course I do, Papa, but Mama said I must not ask until they were offered.
Zabai Ben Selim was unable to contain himself any longer.
Ali, he roared, bring in my daughter's birthday gift.
In the open courtyard of the house came her father's favourite slave, leading a dainty, prancing, storm-grey mare, bridled in red leather with tinkling brass bells, and wearing a small matching saddle. Zenobia was speechless with surprise and delight. More than anything, she had wanted a fine Arab horse for her very own. She had spent the last 6 months hinting at it none too gently to her father.
Oh, Papa, she finally whispered.
Then you like her?
Zabai Ben Selim teased his beloved only daughter.
Oh, yes, yes, Papa, yes.
Zabai, you did not tell me. Iris looked worried. A horse? She is far too little.
Do not worry, my love. The mare has been bred for docility, I promise you.
Tamar put a gentle hand on Iris's shoulder and said in a low voice,
Don't overprotect her, Iris. You will do her no favour if you do. Bedawi women are bred to be independent.
I want to ride her now, Zenobia cried, and Zabai lifted his daughter up onto the mare's back.
She sat proudly, as if she had been born to sit there.
Come on, Akbar, I'll race you,
Zenobia challenged her father's heir.
I must get to my horse, he protested, amused.
Well, hurry.
She fussed at him and was quickly off through the courtyard door. In the year in which she was 11, Zenobia decided she would not go on the winter trek with her family. Palmyra had suddenly become a fascinating place to her. How she loved the city, with its beautiful covered and colonnaded streets, great temples and broad marble avenues, its wonderful shops and open-air markets, each with a different and distinct smell. Leather tanning, perfumes being blended, wet wool being readied for weaving and dyeing, the silk dyeing vats, the livestock, the spices, exotic foods of all kinds. She simply couldn't bear to leave it again. With stubborn resolve, she had secreted herself when no one was looking, and now she hugged herself gleefully, convinced she would not be found.
Zenobia!
Tamar's voice echoed sharply through the virtually empty house.
Zenobia! Where are you, child? Come now, you cannot hide from us any longer. The trek has already begun.
Zenobia, you are being foolish.
Iris's voice was becoming tinged with annoyance. Come to us at once. Under the great bed in her father's bedchamber, the child crouched, chuckling softly. She would not spend the winter in the damned desert again this year. The gods only knew she hated it. Miles and miles and miles of endless sand. Long, boring days of blue skies, cloudless and as placid as pap. She sniffed with distaste. Then there were the goats. While her very best friend, Julia Tullio, got to spend the whole delicious winter season in Palmyra, going to the theatre and to the games, she, Zenobia Bat Zabai, spent her winters herding a flock of dumb, smelly goats. It was embarrassing. The Bedawi measured a man's wealth in the livestock he owned, which made Zenobia's father an extremely wealthy man. But how she hated chasing those silly, temperamental goats all winter. Only nights in the desert were interesting. She loved it when the skies grew dark and filled with crystalline stars, some so bright and so large that they seemed almost touchable. Her father had taught her to read the stars, and she believed that as long as she could see them, she would be able to find her way back to Palmyra from Hades itself.
Ha! Zenobia, there you are!
Tamar reached beneath the bed and pulled her out with strong fingers.
No! Zenobia shouted furiously, struggling.
I will not go. I hate the months away from Palmyra. I hate the desert.
Don't be foolish, Tamar replied patiently. You are Bedawi, and the desert is our way. Come along now, Zenobia. There's my good girl.
Tamar raised her up. The child pulled defiantly away from the older woman, her strangely adult eyes flashing.
I am only half Bedawi, and even that half does not like the desert.
Tamar had to laugh, for it was the truth, and she could not really blame Zenobia. She was young, and the city was exciting. As Iris joined them, Zenobia flung herself at her pretty parent.
I don't want to go, Mama. Why can we not just stay here, the two of us? Papa will not mind. The theatre season is just beginning, and Julia says that a wonderful troupe of dancers and actors from Rome will be performing here this winter.
Our place is with your father, Zenobia.
Iris never raised her soft voice, but there was no arguing with her tone. She stroked her only child's sleek, dark head. What a beauty the little one was turning out to be, and how much she loved her.
Could I not stay with Julia? Her mamma says it would be all right. You don't need me to herd the goats.
Zenobia made one last desperate try.
No, Zenobia,
came the firm and quiet reply. But a tiny smile twitched at the corners of Iris's mouth. Poor Zenobia, she thought. She knew just how her daughter felt. But she would say nothing, for she knew sympathy only encouraged rebellion. Iris, too, disliked the desert. But never in all the years she had been Zabai's wife had she ever admitted it out loud. It was part of her husband's heritage, and when she had married him, she had accepted it. She held out her hand to her daughter. Come now, my dearest. Let us go without further ado. The others are already several miles ahead of us, and you know how I dislike galloping a camel. It makes me sick if I must do it for too long. Come along.
Yes, Mama.
Zenobia sighed, defeated. The three had turned to go when they heard strange footsteps on the stairs outside the bedchamber door. Tamar stiffened, sensing danger. Then, pulling Zenobia from her mother, she pushed the girl down and back under the bed with its bright red satin hangings.
Stay there, she hissed urgently. And whatever happens, do not come out until I tell you. Do you understand? Do not come out until I call you.
The door to the bedchamber was flung open before Zenobia could protest. She could not see from her hiding place that the room had suddenly been invaded by a small party of Roman soldiers. Tamar quickly stepped forward, saying,
Good morning, Centurion. How may I help you?
The Centurion eyed her boldly, thinking as he did so that she was a fine figure of a woman with her big, pillowy tits, and that she looked clean and disease-free.
Whose house is this?
He demanded. Tamar recognized his look. She prayed she could stay calm.
This is the house of Zabai ben Zelim, warrior chief of the Bedawi, Centurion. Allow me to introduce myself. I am Tamar Bad Hamid, senior wife to Zabai ben Zelim. This other lady is my lord's second wife, Iris Bad Simon.
Why are you alone? Where are the servants?
The Centurion's tone was arrogant.
I can see that you are new to Palmyra, Centurion. The Bedawi spend but half the year in Palmyra. The other half we spend in the desert. My husband left but a few minutes ago. Iris and I were checking to be sure that everything was secure. One cannot trust slaves to see to it.
She paused a moment, hoping he would be satisfied and let them go. Seeing his intent still unchanged, she decided to attack.
May I ask why you have entered this house, Centurion? It is not the policy of the Roman army to enter private houses within a friendly city. My husband is a well-respected citizen of this city, honored by all who know him. He holds Roman citizenship, Centurion, and is personally acquainted with the governor. I would also tell you that Zabai ben Selim is cousin to this city's ruler, Prince Odenathus.
He did not look at her directly when he said,
"The gates were wide open as we rode by. Since we saw that the house appeared to be deserted, we came to check that robbers were not stripping the property of a Roman citizen."
He was lying, and both of them knew it. The gates had been firmly locked behind Zabai when he had left. Tamar was afraid, but she knew that to show fear would encourage these men in whatever mischief they were planning.
"As always," she said, her voice heavy with sincerity, "the Romans are the keepers of the peace. I shall tell my lord Zabai of your concern, centurion. He will be well pleased."
She turned to Iris, who stood nervously behind her.
"Come, Iris, we must hurry to meet our lord Zabai. Our camels are in the stable, centurion. Would one of your men be kind enough to fetch them for us?" "How do I know that you are who you say you are?"
the centurion said.
"You might be thieves, for all I know, and then I should be in trouble with my commanding officer."
The ring of men was closing in about them.
"My lord Zabai, his wives, and his entire family are well known to the Roman governor of this city,"
Tamar repeated threateningly. She was very afraid now. These, she realized, were not regular legionnaires. These were auxiliaries, barbarians recruited from Gallic and Germanic tribes, noted for being pitiless, without mercy or respect for anything, including women.
"I am sure that you are both well known in the city,"
the centurion said insinuatingly, and the men with him laughed, their eyes hot. His gaze, bold and cruel, he reached out and pushed Tamar aside.
"I want a better look at you,"
he said to Iris, pulling her forward. At first, she looked at him unflinchingly, her blue-grey eyes scornful, but her heart was thumping violently against her ribs. She felt as if she was staring death in the face. The centurion let his hand caress her ash-blonde hair almost lingeringly. Slowly the hand wandered downward over her body, fondling her breasts.
"Centurion," she said in a quiet, strained voice,
"not only am I wife to Zabai ben Selim, but I am the only daughter of the great banker, Simon Titus of Alexandria. Do not allow a simple rudeness to escalate into a serious crime."
"You lie," he said pleasantly. "You are a whore of Palmyra."
"Centurion, do not do this thing,"
Iris said, her voice now trembling. "Do you not have a wife or a sister? Would you like it if someone did this thing to them?" He looked at her dispassionately, and she saw no pity or mercy in his ice-blue eyes.
"It has been a long time since I have had a fair woman," he said,
and then he pushed her back onto the bed. Her instinct for survival made her attempt to rise, but he shoved her back brutally, and Iris's control left her. She screamed, totally terrified. The centurion slapped her viciously with one hand, while ripping her gown and pushing it up to her belly with the other. His knee jammed between her resisting thighs while she fought him, clawing at his face with her nails, maddened with fear, already ashamed of what was happening to her. She had known no man but her loving, gentle husband. She had known nothing but tenderness and kindness at his hands. Iris had never imagined that a man could do this to a woman. Even knowing it was useless, she continued to fight him, because something deep within her refused to accept this horror. And the centurion, in his fury at being thwarted, continued to strike her into submission. Both her eyes were almost swollen shut when she felt him gain the advantage and thrust with a cruel, burning pain into her resisting body. Her reason finally left her as he pounded against her again and again, conscious only of his own pleasure in subduing the woman.
"By the gods," he grunted, "this is the best piece of cunt I've fucked in months."
Beneath the bed, hidden by the coverings. The child.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?